This won't end well for Illinois.
Here's a three. It ended well.
McCourt for the win. In the air. It is up. And it is gone.
Fourth and 16. Pressure comes. And Matt Orbebe with the ball in the air. Makes the catch.
Welcome to Oski Talk. I'm Drew Pastorek. We've got a lot of football to talk about, got some basketball to talk about, and joined by Brant Dolce, one of our colleagues here at the Champagne Room. He'll be jumping in here in just a second. Obviously, Illini on a bye this week, so no football. Basketball is going to play a game before football plays his next game, which is a little odd, but that's kind of how the cookie crumbles here. So Nebraska, Illinois' next football opponent, also on a bye. So we can't even like preview anything really. Not even saying what's it looking like. We have no idea. So I think that's kind of nice. You know, both teams are going to get a chance to study and prepare. And Illinois going up against statistically the worst defense in the Big Ten. What could possibly go wrong? No letdown possible there whatsoever. But got some, we're going to talk a lot of football stuff. We're going to talk about the Heisman hunts. Chase Brown only took 7 weeks for people to pay attention that, hey, this guy's pretty good. Maybe we should talk about him for the Heisman. Blake Corum's on Heisman watch, but not the guy who's got 200 more yards than him. Okay, but I digress. And also talking some hoop stuff. Bringing in Brant Dolce now. Brant, good to talk to you again, man. Welcome back to Oski Talk.
Hey, Drew. Thanks for having me, man.
A lot's happened since the last time you were on the show. I think we were at the end of the Virginia game the last time you were on the show. The last bye week. So yeah, and a little bit has changed since then.
Yeah, and I remember saying that I think they were going to go to Madison and beat the Badgers, and that was like blasphemous. And now it's to the point where you look back and it's like it's pretty obvious now. But, you know, we talked about that Indiana game, that only loss that Illinois continues to have, and potentially that being like almost a springboard in terms of missed opportunity that would help propel them. And that's what's happened. And now we're seeing very quickly, if you look at anything that like Pro Football Focus puts out, or any of, you just get on Twitter and search college football playoff, most analysts and analytics have 17 teams left with a legitimate chance to get in the playoffs. And Illinois is one of them. And the first time I talked to our fearless leader and I decided I was going to, you know, get re-involved in June, I thought, man, I'd like to cover football again, but, you know, 5-7 or 4-8 doesn't sound too appealing. And now here we are. You know, someone pointed out in our group chat the other day, like, there's a basketball game in 10 days? Like, what the hell's going on? Because usually, you know, I call my dad, only 82 days until our first basketball game. And now I completely forgot. So everything's changed in a very quick amount of time here with Illinois football.
Well, I'll give you credit, man. You shot your shot. You called it out. You said, no BS. Illinois is going to go to Madison and beat Wisconsin. Like, no hesitation. No, like, well, if this happened, you were like, no, it's going to happen. And we were like, that'd be great. Wouldn't that be nice? And now it's like, that was a precursor to what we're seeing now. Illinois beating Wisconsin, then beating Iowa, then beating Minnesota. First time since 1983 that's happened in the same season. How old were you in Brant 1983?
I would have been not quite two. I was one and some change.
And I was negative two, so it's been a minute. Yeah. It's been a little bit.
When we talked about that, I remember distinctly going, you know, let's look at the schedule here and look forward. And I said, I can distinctly not be surprised at all if Illinois goes to Nebraska and loses 31-10. As right. Coming off the bye week when everyone's looking ahead. And I said that kind of in jest at the time. And given how far the defense has come and how far, I mean, another conversation we had was like at Moron, I said, are we sure that DeVito's the guy? And it was more for a talking point, but I mean, he was fantastic. Did you see his ranking rating on Pro Football Focus last week? He was the highest rated quarterback in all of FBS.
I think it was like efficiency maybe.
Yeah, it was like 92.4. He was ahead of everyone.
Yeah, because McCarthy from Michigan's got like a better completion percentage. He's like 78% or something. But yeah, I think as far as efficiency,
just that one single game,
the total package. Yeah, I think he's right up there. Yeah.
Yeah, I would be at this point. I would be. I don't know if shocked is the right word, but I'd be really surprised if Illinois does not go up there and win this game 30-7, 31-10, 28-10, something
talking
like that.
Talking Nebraska, you mean?
Yeah, I just don't – Nebraska's defense, as you pointed out at the top, it's atrocious. And we're getting the big boy back, which I've been hoping for this for a long time because I really like Josh McCray a lot.
I was going to get to that too. I was going to mention that. You know, you've been sort of pleading and clamoring, like, we need Josh McCray. And after Minnesota, Brett Bielema hinted that they think he's going to be ready. They expect him to be there, especially with, you know, 2 weeks to just rehab and recuperate and get healthy. It's crazy that he's been out since week one. We were talking about at the beginning of the season, like, they need both these guys to be, you know, at their optimum level. So I guess that's my only concern. Maybe concern is not the right word, is like, McCray is coming back, which is great. He adds that element. You know, the red zone offense has been bad as far as converting touchdowns. I think he helps there. But with Brown having such an impactful season, like, how do you go about sharing those touches, like delegating those carries? Like, you don't want to ruin a good thing. Like, we want to keep this Chase Brown thing going. You don't want to wear him down. You don't want to give him 35, 40 carries a week. But
no, you most certainly did not.
But how do you reintegrate him into the offense? Is that, you know, hey, we're just going to give him, you know, 10, 12 carries. He's going to be third and one, third and two, goal line. Like, you know, you've got such a good thing going right now. You don't want to mess with it too much.
Yeah, I think Illinois carried the ball over almost 50 times against Minnesota. 41 of those were Chase Brown.
Yeah,
not ideal.
54 yeah. And Brown had 41 of them. Yeah.
Not ideal, but really I watched the game. I haven't really went back and watched it a second time, but one thing about Chase Brown is he carries the ball a lot, but he really never gets where you're like, oh, like when he gets tackled, it's usually he's going down or he's going out of bounds or they've had to have two or three people kind of drag him down. And nevertheless, though, that's way too many carries. And right. I think, as much as they want to run the ball, just from with their defense, if they can control the clock, makes their defense even better. The way that they used the duo last year in Happy Valley, when you'd have the big boy come in and run three or four times in a row up the middle, 4 yards, 6 yards, 8 yards, and then play seven or eight of the drive, you put Brown in there and he pops like an outside zone or something for 14, 16 yards, then you're in hurry up. And you also have an additional weapon this year that we didn't have anything close to this for almost 15 years, almost since Shieldhouse was here. But now DeVito has emerged as a legitimate threat to where if you leave a guy open, and in a lot of cases against Minnesota, even if you don't leave a guy open, he's still going to find him. And I'm excited to see if they decide to put McCray and Brown there at the same time.
Yeah.
And if that's a factor in terms of just making the defense think about something else.
Yeah.
And I think with Nebraska's defense being as bad as it is, I'd be okay with, honestly, Chase Brown getting 18 to 22 carries for 140 yards and a touchdown and letting the big boy McCray come in and just see what he can do. You got some options there. It's a delicate balance of you're trying to get your feature back, who's also a three down back, which makes it even more difficult because he's excellent in pass protection, and you're trying to get him in consideration for the Heisman Trophy, which even saying that it just sounds ridiculous.
It's a fever dream almost to think that. I mean,
we're putting the cart before the horse a little bit here.
Yeah.
Illinois takes care of the business that they should take care of, and I don't see whether there's any reason they won't. That game against Michigan almost turns into a college football playoff game. It does for Illinois for sure, because if they lose that, even if they were somehow to beat Ohio State or Michigan, they're probably out. But, you know, that's why this Indiana game is just – the more you look back on it, it's like, man, if one of those calls are properly adjudicated or they – you know, and then they don't have to go for it on fourth and one twice inside the five because of the points. But you still should have won the game regardless. If that was the case, they'd be in the top 10 already, and they'd have a little bit of wiggle room to where if they beat Indiana, the West would be over at this point, basically. And then they'd have to beat Michigan or Ohio State and Michigan in the championship game, they'd be in. So just it's a crazy time.
Drew Pastorek and Brant Dolce on Oski Talk, talking about Illini football. Just real quick, I want to circle back to Chase Brown because, I mean, what he's doing is really remarkable. Can't say enough good things about him. 1,059 yards this season. He's now sixth. I mentioned this last week on the show. He passed six guys on the all-time rushing list in one game. Like, he passed Howard Griffith, Rashard Mendenhall, Pierre Thomas, Juice Williams, Michael LaShore, and Josh Ferguson in one game.
Man, and those are some names.
And those are some names, right? Those are dudes, like all-time great backs. Mm-hmm.
You know how many games Chase Brown played?
He's only 90 yards away from Rocky Harvey.
Oh, wow.
Which is from the late 90s. So, fun fact, I actually saw Rocky Harvey play when he was in high school, not knowing, obviously, he was Rocky Harvey.
Yeah.
I'm from the Quad Cities. I forget what school he was, like Proviso West or somewhere, one of those Chicago area schools. They were playing my high school. I was like, 9 or 10 years old at the time. And he was like a freshman or sophomore, and he was like an all-state running back as like a 15-year-old or something stupid.
And he was a stud. I remember him.
And like later on down the road, it was like, oh my God, like we watched him play. Like our team whipped his ass, but like he was the team. Like he was the guy. And I remember he was like the first guy I really remember other than Kittner that like I paid attention to with Illini football. And that was the reason, because I had that framework from when I was, 9 years old or 10 years old. So, yeah. I mean, he's getting up there with some names. I mean, I don't have the list in front of me, but he could probably be a top four maybe by the end of the season, top three even.
Yeah, it's pretty like it's bunched. Like you pass six guys in one game, that's a lot. Like it is pretty tight. Like I don't know if he can get all the way to the top. He's on. Bielema said in a press conference last week, I think Chase Brown's participated in 27 games, and he's in the top whatever he is at the university. And it's not, it's not quite USC, but there's been a lot of really good running backs at Illinois.
Yeah.
They just really have. Going back, you want to go back even into the 80s and then,
like Red Grange. And all the way. Yeah. I mean,
I think all those guys you mentioned he passed. I was trying to think as you were talking. I think all the guys that you mentioned that were running backs, Juice Williams, the obvious exception at quarterback, I think they all played in the NFL. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure they all were in the NFL at some point.
Yeah, I mean, Griffith, a Super Bowl champ. Mendenhall had a long career. Pierre Thomas had a long career. LaShore, I think, had some concussion stuff or some injury stuff.
Lions drafted him in the third round, yeah.
But, yeah, he was a guy with the Lions for a couple of years. I think Ferguson, maybe.
He dabbled a little bit.
I'm not sure of, but those other guys certainly, played for a good long while. I saw this Illini Stats and Notes on Twitter, at Illini Stats. They're great, terrific stuff. They tweeted that Chase Brown is averaging more rushing yards per game than 64 FBS teams. Like, it's just stupid. Like, it's just absolutely ridiculous what he's doing. I also saw this too. Illini Football tweeted this yesterday or earlier in the week, I think. Three Power 5 players have rushed for 100 yards in each of their first seven games and had a 6-1 or better team record since 2000. Chase Brown, Zeke Elliott, Adrian Peterson.
Ooh.
I know, like you said, we're putting the cart before the horse, but like it just tells you he is doing stuff that we really, really have not seen, even at Illinois, which has had some great backs historically in a really long time.
Yeah, and I'm looking at the game-by-game stats here, and something I haven't even thought about, Blake Corum's got all these yards and these touchdowns. Their first three games were against,
Pop Warner teams.
The worst teams in college football.
Yeah.
And if you look at Chase
Brown, they're
playing
7-on-7, basically.
Yeah. And Chase Brown's first game, Wyoming, they pound him 38-6, and we're all like, yeah, whatever. Well, Wyoming turns out they're pretty good. He had 151 yards and only carried the ball 19 times.
Yep.
Then against Virginia, boat raced them 24-3. He only carried the ball 20 times for 146 yards and he averaged almost 7.5 yards in both those games. And if you throw in UTC, that game was over after about 3 minutes. He only carried the ball 20 times. I bet you if they go back and if McCray would have been available, et cetera, if he gets another 5 to 7 carries against Wyoming and Virginia,
yeah,
he may have an extra 150 yards.
And that's the Heisman thing is they want the style points. They want that Reggie Bush game where he goes for 250 or 275 and 4 touchdowns. He hasn't had that. So they're like, oh, wow, he's had a really good year. But. And it's like, oh, Illinois is this nice story. Like if Chase Brown played for Oklahoma or Alabama or Georgia, like full stop, it's over. Like it's already done. Or Michigan or Ohio State. It's like, don't even invite anybody else. Just hand him the trophy now.
Yeah. Unfortunately, like the Wisconsin game, he gets a touchdown and DeVito has 3 sneaks inside the one. And unfortunately, one of the knocks on Chase Brown nationally, if you're a guy on either coast and you cover college football and you have a Heisman vote and you don't watch any of the flyover state games, you go, yeah, he's got a lot of yards, but he only has 4 touchdowns.
Yep.
Some of these guys are getting 4 touchdowns in one game.
Jake Butt and Joshua Perry have a podcast for BTN. And I just saw that.
I was just watching that myself.
And they were talking about the same thing. Like, you know, Joshua Perry's like, he's got to get in the end zone more. Like, you got to respect him. Like, he should be getting more recognition, but he hasn't put the ball in the end zone. And Jake Butt said something really interesting, too. By the way, I really like him. I think
he's excellent.
He's really good. I really like him a lot. But he kind of alluded to what we were talking about just now. Like, you know, Chase Brown, he seems to be okay with, like, I'll just get a 5-yard run right now. I'll get a 6-yard run right now. He's cool with doing that. And then he's like, okay, now I'm ready. He'll just pop off like a 50-yard run. He doesn't need to get 9 yards a carry, 8 yards a carry. Like, he's cool just being that guy that keeps the chains moving. And then he's going to crush you late like he did against Wisconsin. He busted that game open. He ended that game. Like, he had, I think, like 15 carries for like 40 yards or something. And then, boom, he gets a 45-yard touchdown run. Boom, he gets a 30-yard run. And that game is over.
I think one of the things to consider, too, is if you're talking about the Heisman or any of these awards, you have to, in my opinion, you have to also factor in the value to the team because Illinois doesn't have C.J. Stroud and 4, you know, top 15 wide receivers and a top 15 tight end and a first-round left tackle and a first-round left guard. If you put Chase Brown on Ohio State right now, it would be over. Like, just send it to his house, it's over. He'd probably have 1,500 yards and 15 touchdowns. And the ability for him to carry the ball the last 2 games, 31 and 41 times, and average over 4.5 yards a carry with no fumbles. Oh, and by the way, he caught a 40-yard touchdown the first drive against Minnesota. I mean, they don't win. I will guarantee you this. They don't win that Iowa game without Chase Brown. I mean, there is 0% chance.
Not at all.
And they don't win. I mean, they probably don't beat Minnesota. I mean, it's just, I think he adds an additional layer of value, especially being a third down back right now with they have their full stable available. So I'm going to be really interested to see. And I watched the press conferences today from this week with the buy there later in the week. And Lunny went for about 15 minutes and he got, quite frankly, the first 5 minutes of his press conference were a derivation of why can't you do anything inside the 5?
Yeah.
And he kind of just said, you know, some of this is on me and some of it is, you know, we did a self scout this week and some of the plays that didn't work weren't necessarily because they were the wrong play. It's someone didn't execute properly, which I understand. And I just feel like there wasn't much creativity and something's missing there. And I don't know what it is. I think it's a lack of any kind of dynamic tight end whatsoever to have the ability to catch the ball. So, I mean,
I think we sort of talked about that in our group chat too. Like, we know Chase Brown's good. We could talk about Chase Brown all day long, but like the red zone stuff, you know, they've got Luke Ford, they've got Tip Ryman, they've got, you know, Marquise. They don't have that Daniel Barker guy. Like we were talking about, you know,
no kidding.
What are these guys like? What's going through these guys' minds now? Like, I'm not denigrating the decisions. They're college kids. They can do whatever the hell they want to do. It's fine. Daniel Barker transfers to Michigan State, probably thinking, hey, you know, we just had like a 10-win season. You know, I'm going to flourish in this offense. And they've been just dreck. Like, they've been very disappointing. One of the more disappointing teams probably in the Big Ten. It's like, man, all these guys that left. And again, I'm not knocking guys for leaving. They have their own reasons. They do it for their own motivations. But it's like, this is that old school way of thinking of like, man, if y'all just like took a step back and thought it through a little bit more, do you think there's any buyer's remorse there? Like, shit, I left. Now they're 6-1. My team's getting creamed every week. Like, oops, like, did I make a wrong decision? Like, can I get store credit at least? Like, I do something with this.
Had Barker stayed at tight end for that would,
like,
just...
he's probably an all Big Ten tight end again.
Yeah,
he'd probably be like third, second round draft pick material if he stays with DeVito throwing him the ball.
Yeah, I'm
and maybe that and maybe that played into it too. Maybe it's like, our quarterback situation's kind of a mess. Like, trying to get stats. I'm trying to catch passes. We ain't got a guy that can do that. Hindsight 2020, DeVito's coming in. He's got command of the offense. And now things are working out better. But, man, if I was one of those guys, Barker specifically, if I'm one of those guys, I'm like, I missed out on something really special, probably.
You know, and when Barker makes – it's kind of like poker. You make the – you put your chips on the table at the time you make the decision. You don't know what's coming on the river. But I think in his mind, he's like, man, I'm trying to make the NFL. Is Art Sikowski going to get me to the NFL? No, he's not.
Nope.
Michigan State's got a dynamic offense with a dynamic quarterback. And they fill the ball with a tight end a lot. And they're probably going to be pretty good. I'm going to make the jump. And, you know, it hasn't worked out so great for him. It's worked out pretty good for Illinois. But what I can tell you, I'm looking at some more, you know, just statistics and analytics from the last three games, which, as we pointed out, at Wisconsin, Iowa at home, Minnesota at home. Here are the three quarterback ratings for big-time Tommy DeVito, 50 being average. Saturday on the first, 34-10 win at Wisconsin, QBR 84.2, 18 of 24 for 167 yards. Iowa at home, where he didn't play a whole lot, played a quarter. That game would have been drastically different if he played. Quarterback rating of 87.1. And then in Minnesota, which is probably the best Illinois quarterback game in at least a decade, he goes 25 of 32 for 252, a touchdown, 78.1% completions, and a QBR of 96.0. 100 is perfect.
Against the second-rated defense in the Big Ten.
Correct. And the reason I like the QBR instead of the rating, the QBR takes into account, like, he was 25 of 32. Illinois had three drops, and he threw two balls away. I mean, 25 for 27 in for all intents and purposes.
Yeah.
And the one pass he missed was a pass he had to throw like 7 feet to Chase Brown that he threw right in the ground. I mean, he was phenomenal. And if he can just be at the level we talked about last time I was on, more than a game manager, and take care of the ball, which – he has clearly done. And of course, he has not thrown an interception since I've been on. Hasn't thrown any picks in the last four games.
That's all you.
I mean, he's been really, and we went from, well, let's see how he can do, to, damn, I wish he was a sophomore. Damn, right. I wish he was a junior. I can tell you, though, what's going to happen is this is almost not a clone, but pretty close to Tommy DeVito's kind of Rust the Must 2.0 a little bit. Comes from another program that does pretty well. Comes here. He's been phenomenal. This is going to – I think every quarterback that's a sophomore or a freshman that's got some talent, that's at a high major program, they got their ears open and their eyes open, and they're going, huh.
Yeah.
Let me see here. This looks pretty good. This is a pretty good offense, very progressive. Great offensive line. Got more guys coming in. Just got a commitment today. You know what? Maybe instead of staying here, maybe I'll talk to Brett Bielman, see what he has to offer at Illinois, and we might not have to wait for – Donovan Leary, because it sounds like it's going to take him at least one more year to develop. Yeah. Could turn out to be pretty good, but I mean, I don't think Donovan Leary is going to be what Tommy DeVito is right now. At least I don't think so.
I tend to think that next year's quarterback, and again, we don't want to foreshadow too much. You know, we're trying to enjoy the now, but I do have a feeling that next year's quarterback's probably not on the roster currently. Next year's starting.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this isn't derogatory to anyone on the roster now, but I hope it's not. I hope he is not. Or either that, or I hope Leary or somehow Sitkowski or someone else they have transforms into someone really good. But I don't think that's realistic. But with the success they're having now and this additional bye week that they have because of playing week zero, they're going to get some churn. And I think they'll have the ability to get at least a game manager. I don't know what they'll find someone. I have so much confidence in Bielema at this point that he'll find someone.
Yeah.
And the one thing that I've learned from watching sports all these years is the great coaches get players that fit their system. They don't just get great players. Bruce Weber is no longer the coach anywhere because he tried to get great players to fit his system rather than to get players that fit his system. I mean, he had some monster recruiting classes at Illinois in the mid-2000s, and they couldn't do anything because he got the wrong type of guy.
Yeah.
And Bielema has said from the get-go, hey, look, if I would have had this recruiting class coming off 12-1 at Wisconsin, I would have been elated. And we were all kind of like, yeah, okay, buddy. Well, I mean, look what's happening.
Yeah. Like,
so we'll see how it plays out. I'm sure they installed some new stuff for Nebraska coming off this second bye. And I'm excited. I was talking to a guy at my meetings. I was just at. He's a huge Nebraska fan. Played small college football as a tight end. And I'm like, you know, normally I'd be like, oh, thank God they don't have to play. I can watch some real football. And now it's like another bye? What is going on? Football doesn't have to
be. How am I
going
to spend my Saturday with no football?
Let's play a game. So it's just completely flipped.
Brant Dolce joining me on this edition of Oski Talk, talking bye week Illini football. I wanted to kind of focus on Illinois' offense again. We were sort of going through Chase Brown, and we shifted to DeVito. But we talked briefly about Barry Lunney and UTSA and, you know, kind of the balance he's brought to this offense. The offense has accentuated the defense. There's no doubt about that. It's still the defense has been the reason they've won many of these games, for sure. But it is very similar, and Brett Bielema alluded to this at Big Ten Media Days back in July, that, you know, UTSA had a 1,400-yard rusher in Sincere McCormick, but they also had a receiver who caught like 80 balls, and another guy who had 70, another guy who had like 60. Illinois right now has three wide receivers on pace for 700 yards.
That's great.
So Bryant's got 371. Williams has 346, but Williams has like 20 more catches than anybody else. He's got like 45 catches or something stupid. Mm-hmm. And then Hightower is at 302. So three guys that right now are on pace. If they keep it up, they're on track for 700 or more yards. That's totally a DeVito thing of having command of his offense, spreading the wealth around. And that's Barry Lunney calling great games for the most part, mm-hmm. not having a key on one guy and having, you know, okay, we've got our big play guy, you know, Pat Bryant's our like zoomer down the field who can go up and get those deep passes. Hightower's more of like the in-traffic guy who gets the contested catches. And then you have Williams, who's like the scat back guy. Like, he'll catch the screen pass at the line of scrimmage and then make six guys miss and pick up 8-9 yards every time. So it's really a unique offense. And, you know, Brett Bielema, it's like he was looking at an oracle or something. He said that, you know, this is a balance that we don't have a lot of in this conference. And if you break it down, it's really true, other than Ohio State, which has NFL dudes, their eighth string wide receiver is going to be a second round draft pick in 2 years, probably. You know, they crank them out like Pez candy. But other than Ohio State, Michigan, maybe Penn State, like, there's not that dynamism on offense that other teams have in the league.
No, even we talked about Purdue here a couple minutes ago, and that's, you know, I feel like at this point, Illinois and Purdue are the two teams. And Aiden O'Connell, I think, is averaging 68% completion for his career, which would just obliterate the Purdue record. And that's saying something. One dimensional is not going to cut it against Illinois' defense. It's just not. And they out Wisconsin, then they out Iowa. In all the out Iowa games of all time, they beat them 9-6.
Yes, that was the most Iowa game to ever Iowa, and Illinois withstood that somehow. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to go back to the stats, because we were talking about, we were talking about the defensive matchups, and Illinois has won these games against admittedly subpar offenses. Minnesota was probably the best offense they played all year, and Ibrahim had a couple of big runs, but not much else other than that. Tanner Morgan had, I think, 4 completions, couldn't do anything. Yeah. And that was before Gabe Backus punched him in the head, by the way. So let's not act like it was the first quarter and they had, Ethan Kaliakmanis in the game the entire day. They didn't. It was like the last 4 minutes of the game. He was like 4 out of 15 for 20 yards, just couldn't do anything. So now we look at it. Nebraska's coming up next. They are last in the Big Ten in passing defense. Also happen to be last in rushing defense. So it just, again, it's like, I don't want to assume that Illinois is going to win, because it's tailor-made for Illinois to win this game, and they're going to piss down their leg and they're going to lose it's going to be like that Nebraska game a couple years ago where Nebraska fumbled 9 times and they still won the game 42-38. It could be that game. Nebraska's offense is good. They've got guys, they've got skilled guys. They can run, they can throw. They've got a dual threat quarterback, but their defense is so bad. I cannot envision Illinois, they'd have to really beat themselves, in my opinion, and really have an Indiana thing where they screw around for a long time and can't convert on 4th downs. Or if Barry Lunney has that game plan, if he calls the game he called against Minnesota and Illinois executes, that's a 3-touchdown win.
Yes. We're talking about some stats. What do you think the average yards per play that Nebraska's defense is allowing this year?
Yards per play.
Average yards per play. They have an elite offense. They're averaging 5.9 yards per play on offense.
I would say they're probably giving up 8 or 9 yards per play.
6.1, which is almost unfathomable.
But that's bad. It's still bad.
That is.
So they're not as bad as I thought, but they're still not good.
I think Illinois is 3.5, which is obviously one of the elite teams. Their opponents are averaging 424 yards per game.
So I was curious. I was like, okay, what do we have left? And Mahir, one of our football guys at the Champagne Room, he posts a lot of really good stuff. Highly recommend you read his stuff at thechampagneroom.com. He was talking about Nebraska, Purdue, Michigan State, they're bottom 5 in passing defense. And I was like, okay, well, I'm curious. What is bottom 5? What is that? So Nebraska's DFL, 281.3 yards per game passing defense. Purdue, which has a really good passing offense so far, they're 10th, 248.4 yards per game allowed. And Michigan State is 11th at 269 allowed per game. And Illinois, I want to say they're 10th or 11th in passing yards per game. It's somewhere around 216, 217 per game. So they still might not be able to do that, 330, 340, 350, but they're going to be able to move this ball down the field. I don't suspect another, 13-9 Purdue game. I don't expect that. I think you could see maybe a 35-28 kind of game with Nebraska. It's possible just because of the offense being so multidimensional. State's a one-dimensional team. They can't run the ball right now. They really could use Kenneth Walker this year, that's for sure. So defensively, the table's kind of set for Illinois to maybe getting more of those scoring opportunities in the red zone, maybe snapping off some more of those big plays. That might be in the offing for them with these next 3 opponents they have coming up: Nebraska in Lincoln, then Michigan State and Purdue at home.
And if we're talking specifically about Nebraska next week, what's the number one thing that Illinois needs to work on? That's gold zone offense, which I consider that, you know, first and goal. Like, you got to score touchdowns there. Illinois hasn't been great offensively. Well, this may be the team they want to play, because in that same situation in the red zone, Nebraska opponents have scored touchdowns in 22 possessions. They've scored touchdowns 77.2% of the time.
Woo!
That is atrocious. So their opponents are 17 for 22 in the red zone on touchdowns. So this may be a great chance for Illinois to get inside that 10, get inside that 5, and punch some ball in the end zone and get a little confidence in there and become a more complete team offensively. They gained 460 yards against Minnesota, who was one of the top handful of defenses in the country. I mean, you just went over Nebraska's numbers. They're not the top defense in the state. I mean, they're not any good. They're just not. And I honestly would expect, I can't even believe I'm saying this. I would expect Illinois to get very close to 500 yards of offense, if not eclipse that, especially with as one-dimensional as Nebraska is and as great as Illinois' secondary is. We may see another two or three picks.
It might not take 84 plays to do it, or 86, whatever they ran against Minnesota. Like, they might have a little more free flowing, maybe a little less resistance than Minnesota gave them. Brant, real quick, a lot of great stuff on football. Before we part with that, though, just another stat. We're feeding stats today. Illinois 4-5 last year in the Big Ten, 3-1 this year so far. So Brett Bielema in 13 Big Ten games has 7 victories. The Fighting Illini from 2012 to 2017 combined 8 Big Ten victories. So we're really just in like
seasons.
Right. So we're just really in like unknown territory. Like, we're competent and we don't know what to do with this information. So I just wanted to throw that out there. That's can't state understate how impressive this is.
Here's one off the top of my head. I'm pretty confident that Brett Bielema has more Big Ten wins than Lovie Smith did. I'm pretty confident on that.
I want to say he wound up with 10, but again, it took him 5+ years.
4.5 years, basically.
I think he was like 10-36 or something like that. I don't remember.
Yeah, it's like that.
Maybe he
has a chance to do more.
But he's got a chance to surpass that.
So you're right. So Lovie was a sparkling 10-33.
I was close. 10-33.
Now here's something to consider in terms of the difference in the first 2 years. In Lovie's first 2 years in the Big Ten, he was 2-16.
Yep. Crazy.
He almost got 3 wins in the last 3 weeks.
Yeah. So real quick, Brant, didn't want to get into basketball stuff before we wrap up the show today. Basketball tipping off on the 28th. So exhibition play against Quincy on the 28th, and then November 7th, we are humming. We're moving. This overlap, this crossover is going to be really fun. I talked with Tristan Kissick last week. Went through a lot of good basketball stuff, you know, how we kind of see the team and how things are shaking out. You know, coaching staff's been on a heater, recruiting guys like crazy, really getting the buy-in. You know, I think Brett Bielema and Brad Underwood have a nice coexisting relationship where they have like the same type of philosophy, the buy-in. You see the buy-in with football now, the buy-in with basketball. You know, the things that, you know, Io and Kofi have been able to do, the success rate with basketball. I just wanted to throw this out here too, because again, I was doing some prep for the show today and I came across this. Big Ten basketball the last 3 seasons, this includes the Big Ten tournament. I think it's fairly common knowledge if you follow the Big Ten that Illinois has the most wins in the Big Ten the last 3 years. Do you know the number 2 team in the Big Ten, the second most wins in the Big Ten the last 3
seasons? Well, I do. I mean, this is a great stat. I thought I was doing the same thing you were. I think Iowa has 42. Is that right?
Yeah. Iowa 42-24, second place. What if I feel like I'm in the 30 for 30 guy. I told you that the Michigan Wolverines were 5th on that list? 5th, 36-24. So they had that one really good year in 2020. that they, quote, beat, unquote, Illinois in the Big Ten. And then it's been just the last couple of years. Now, I'm not gonna crap on their Big Ten championship. I'm not that guy that's like, it's a Mickey Mouse championship, but context matters. It was a technicality that they won that in 2020. It was a technicality. They had a better winning percentage, but they did not play as many games. Illinois had a better record. Michigan had the better winning percentage. And Josh Whitman agreed to that. All the ADs agreed to that stipulation when the season started. So can't blame anybody for it. I just think it's interesting that they're spouting off, trumpeting, hey, we won the Big Ten. What did you guys win? Well, we won the Big Ten tournament. Then we won the Big Ten regular season championship. And you had the number one recruiting class in the country, the best recruits of all time in the history of Michigan. Fab Five. No. These guys are way better than the Fab Five. Fab Five couldn't wash these guys' sneakers. And they won like 9 games in the Big Ten. And our coach doesn't punch other coaches in the face. So, sorry. It wasn't a punch. It was like an open hand smack. It wasn't actually a punch. Sorry. I know the Michigan fan, the 3 Michigan fans that'll listen to this and tweet at me about it will say, he didn't punch him. He just swung back and tried to hit him. Your coach shouldn't be trying to fucking hit people to begin with. That's the whole point of the story. Your coach played on the Fab Five, one of the most famous teams ever, played 20 years in the NBA, was an assistant coach in the NBA for like 5 or 6 years. And he's ruffled by Mark Turgeon. Are you kidding? And then,
good joke, man.
And then you didn't even punch the coach you were trying to punch. You were mad at Greg Gard and you swung at his assistant coach. So I'm just saying, Michigan, okay, you won, what, 2-3 more games in a random tournament that thrives, that feeds off randomness. That's what we embrace about March Madness, is the randomness and the chaos. But when it's push and come to shove, your boy Juwan is 0-5 against Illinois.
And so, it would be 0-6 if they didn't duck him in the pandemic.
And, oh, we're going to just back away from playing you in Champaign. We'll play you in Ann Arbor. And then, okay, fine. Our best player is not even playing, and we beat you by 1,000 points. Fine.
You, when they didn't play in Champaign that first, like that first day they were eligible, quote unquote, the men's basketball team did not play, but the women's basketball team did play.
Yeah,
they could have played, and they chose not to because they knew they were not going to win.
So and I
think Juwan Howard. I think Juwan Howard is as hard as he tries to pretend he is, and you know how he's going to do this and he's going to do that. I've never seen a high major coach make more excuses for a team that has so many 4 and 5 star guys. Yes, have they been to the 16 a couple times? Yes,
he
makes excuses for everyone.
Let's just say he's frosty.
I don't know how. I mean, I know he's from Michigan and all that, but I don't know how you keep a guy that does that. And that wasn't the first time he's done it either.
No. Like, and I don't know what Kramenhoff said to him. I don't know what Greg Gard said to him. He might have called him something that we're not supposed to say. Like, he might have said that. Like, he very well could have. You cannot cock back and swing and try to punch an opposing coach. Like, your job as a coach is to set an example for the rest of your team. And if you come unglued in like any circumstance where you're not coming out ahead, then it's just, he's a very thin-skinned guy for a dude who shouldn't be.
He acts like a guy that has like all this stuff to prove.
Right.
He's trying to show how tough he is. He has absolutely nothing to prove.
Like
you went over his resume.
Juwan Howard's.
I mean, honestly, if you talk about college and NBA,
he's one of the most famous players from the probably the last 40 years.
Juwan Howard is like, what, 6'9", 6'10"?
Yeah.
Probably least. 230 pounds. Like, played power forward for two decades. And Mark Turgeon, who's like 5'8", made you fear for your life. He said he was scared for his life. And then Greg Gard, who looks like an HVAC repairman. He pissed you off.
He absolutely does.
Rattled you so much by the way he shook your hand that you're going to like try to assail him on national television after the game is over. After he called a timeout when you called a timeout for the same exact thing like 8 seconds before that. Like, it's just weird. Congrats. You won three more games than Illinois in the NCAA tournament. They're like, it's not a rivalry. It's not a rivalry. And you're right. You actually have to win for it to be a rivalry. And right now you haven't. Underwood 5, Howard 0. Anyway, sorry. Got a little carried away. I got a little fired up.
Yeah, here's kind of where, like, if you're talking about, and it's clear you don't like Michigan, and I don't either. My most hated team of any team, of all the sports I follow, and I follow a lot of them, Indiana basketball, I hate more than any other team.
I'm glad you brought that up. I'll get to that in a second, but go ahead.
The fact that it's just been kind of bestowed upon them that they're going to win the Big Ten and they're ranked number 13 and they're going to be good because they have all their scoring back from last year, even though they couldn't score last year. And the only reason they got the Big Ten tournament is because the now departed Andre Curbelo couldn't make an uncontested layup with a second left. And then they get in the tournament and they get beat by 75 points by St. Mary's. It's like, I understand that it's Indiana and Mike Woodson's back and they got this new freshman. I get all that.
Yeah.
But why has the national media just clamored to Indiana that they're going to, I mean,
I don't,
they're putting on the Big Ten by pretty much every publication.
I don't get it either, Brad. I don't get it either. And
you know what?
And again, that's fine. It's preseason. I'm getting my dander up about Michigan and whatever. Like, it's preseason. Like, we've seen this before. Illinois wasn't predicted to do much in 2020, and they almost won the Big Ten. 2021, they won the Big Ten. Like, they were still projected to be high. So, like, they're, like, second. So it's not like they're picked to finish eighth or something ridiculous. But I agree, like, everyone raved all offseason about Illinois. Like, these transfers they brought in, like the number one transfer class. They've got Sky Clark. He's got this great freshman incoming. Brad Underwood's one of the best coaches in the Big Ten. And yet, like, they don't get – but it's like, but this other team did this. Like, oh, Purdue's bringing back Zach Edey. And then Indiana, you've got TJD. Trace Jackson Davis, he's a hell of a player. He's a really good player. Should be preseason Big Ten player of the year. Absolutely. As you said, they're like, well, Indiana's going to be good because Trace Jackson Davis is back. He's been there for 3 years, and they've won 27 games in the Big Ten. They're 27-36, and he's been there the entire time. He's really, really good, but, like, they don't score points. They're a one-man team. And, oh, we've got Jalen Hood-Schifino. Like, he's our flashy, sexy freshman. Like, wasn't that Christian Lander, like, 3 years ago? Wasn't that Langford, Romeo Langford? Wasn't that him, too, a couple years ago? Like, well, they've got this five-star guy. They're going to just kill everybody. And then they finish, like, 10th in the Big Ten. So I don't get it either. Like, you know, I don't get the IU love, like – yeah, they might be okay. They might be like top three or four, but like, how do you say all these good things about Illinois? Like all the people they brought in and like the transfers and they're loaded, but then they're ranked 23rd because of the guys they brought in that you love. But then one guy comes back for Indiana, a very mid team, and now they're going to be like top 10, top 15, and win the Big Ten. Make it make sense.
It's very simple.
Make it make sense.
If Illinois had got to the Elite Eight or better when they should have, when they were the one seed, and hadn't drawn Houston, who should have been probably a two seed and was inexplicably a five seed, but nonetheless could have won the game. Underwood's I could do 3 hours on that game. I think that's probably the worst coaching job Underwood's done since he's been here, was that Houston game and not playing the freshman.
But what does that have to do with
the outcome?
But what does that have to do with this season, though? Like,
because I'll tell you why. Because this is because humans are doing these polls, and it's the same humans that put UCLA number two in the preseason last year because they got in as a 12th seed, made it to the Final Four. And it's the same reason UNC is going to be the number one overall team this year in the AP poll, because they went to the national championship game.
Right.
But human beings tend to remember the last thing they saw. And Illinois had a couple of Sweet 16s back-to-back, and then they would be reloading and not doing a rebuild. And instead of being 23rd, they'd be 7th or 8th. Here's what I'll tell you. The head coach, Brad Underwood, there's an article that just got released by John Rothstein. Asked him straight up, is this the best roster you've had at Illinois? His one word response is, yes, it is. He thinks it's the best team he's had. Doesn't mean they're going to have the best record, but this team may struggle at the beginning. By February, Illinois is going to be someone that no one wants to play
at all
in the entire country.
I agree. I think they'll take some time to coalesce. You know, it might have to shake some things off in November, but by the time Big Ten play ramps up, I think they're going to be a scary, scary team. I agree.
Back to back. Mark it down.
Could be.
3 in a row.
Hey, you were right about Wisconsin. You were right about Illinois taking down the Badgers in Camp Randall. So if you say it, so it is written, so it shall be. So I'll take that. Mm. Brent Dolce, thanks again for joining Oski Talk, talking football and basketball this week. Good stuff. Looking forward to Illini basketball starting up next week, and then the regular season the week after that, and then Illini maybe in a New Year's bowl game. How about that? Wouldn't that be something?
I got one prediction for you. Illinois 35, Nebraska 9.
35-9. All right, there it is. Brent Dolce, thanks again, man. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Drew. I'll see you next time. Thanks, buddy.
Love talking with Brant. Always great stuff out of him. And he has been a bit of a soothsayer when it comes to the Illini football season. He was on the podcast several weeks ago. I think it was after the Virginia game. And he put it out there. He said, Brett Bielema's going to come back to Madison. Illinois is going to beat Wisconsin. And we were like, oh, wow. Bold statement. But proved to be true. Now he's saying Illinois basketball is going to win Big Ten again. I tend to agree with that. And then he put his marker down on Illinois 35-9 against Nebraska this upcoming Saturday. I mean, he's not afraid to put his takes out there, see if he can speak another one into existence. So again, huge thanks to Brant Dolce for joining Oski Talk this week. Full disclosure, we did record that Thursday evening, so we did not really talk about any of the other Big Ten action because nothing had happened yet. And just wanted to take a quick whip around through the top 25 and then the Big Ten West. In case you missed it, on Sunday, the AP poll came out. Illinois jumped from number 18 to number 17. There was a lot of moving and shaking within the top 25 this weekend. You had number 7, Ole Miss, getting crushed by LSU. UCLA was previously unbeaten. It looked like they were the best hope for the Pac-12 as far as the CFP. They got rocked by Oregon. I think UCLA was 9th and Oregon was 10th, something like that. Then you had number 14, Syracuse, another terrific story of the college football season. They were in a fight with Clemson. They had an early lead. Clemson stormed back in the second half to beat the Orange. Number 17, Kansas State. They lost in Fort Worth to TCU. That was a fun game, very entertaining game Saturday night. Watched a lot of that. And number 20, Texas, losing to Oklahoma State. So those are the most Illini-adjacent games as far as the top 25 goes. Illinois, again, moving up to 17 this week. As far as the Big Ten West is concerned, the big outcome was Purdue just getting
pummeled by Wisconsin. Did not see that coming. 35-24 was the final, but it really wasn't even that close. I mean, the Badgers just absolutely dominated Purdue from start to finish in that game. So now, the end of week 8, Illinois is alone atop the Big Ten West. They were tied with Purdue. Now, obviously, Purdue has an extra L. So it's possible that a win against Purdue could wrap up the Big Ten West with 2 weeks to go. Yeah, don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves, but that is a possibility. We can at least peer through the keyhole there a little bit and see that in the distance. Want to wrap up the show by spotlighting our Illini of the Week. Got to give a shout out to Alex Orr, our resident soccer guy at the Champagne Room. He brought this to our attention in our group chat this weekend, and Illini Soccer tweeted it out as well. Michaela Woods, acrobatic, ridiculous goal late in the soccer match with Minnesota. So it was the season finale on Sunday, Illinois taking on Minnesota. Illinois is down 2-0 at the half. They had gotten a goal to come within one late in the half. And then in the 88th minute, Michaela Woods, this spinning, turning shot. She gets past a couple of defenders coming towards her. She spins around another defender, and it's a left-footed shot. So she's going kind of cross field and gets one about 25 yards away. Puts it in the right corner, upper 90 for a goal to tie it up. Game ends in a 2-2 draw. So Illinois ends the season 7-7-4, 2-5-3 in Big Ten action. But a terrific exclamation point on the season. Michaela Woods, her third goal of the year. It was certainly a dandy. You got to go check that out. Again, Illini Soccer put that out on Twitter. Fantastic stuff. So congratulations to Michaela Woods. She is our Illini of the Week. That's going to wrap up the show. As always, you can download Oski Talk wherever you get your podcasts. You can also find it on the podcast link at thechampagneroom.com. And make sure you follow the Champagne Room on the socials as well, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are not having a football game this week. It's weird also that we're itching to see the Illini play football. It's never going to stop being weird. It's just never going to not be fun and exciting. And next week, we'll actually have basketball to recap as well. I might not spend too much time on it. Exhibition game against Quincy. That is on Friday. And then the football game against Nebraska Saturday afternoon in Lincoln. We'll have plenty to talk about. Until then, I'm Drew Pastorek, ILL.